There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right. And we're back. Yeah, live from the floor. Is there anything other than the floor of the Mobile Convention Center? We're the floor of the Mobile... I guess there's some upper... They're all four. From one of the floors at the Mobile Convention Center, live with Midday Mobile at the Mobile Chambers Business Expo. Good seeing all of you, and appreciate that. People stopping by and visiting with us. They're doing this till 3, I think, today. Maybe, yeah, 3. I think 3. Seeing if I can get a nod from the audience. 3. We'll call it 3. So if you get a chance, stop by and see us here. It is National Radio Day today, so I didn't get a chance last hour to talk about that, but we'll talk about this. And I got a monologue or something to say about local radio on National Radio Day. But before we do that, let's talk about other local media in the print form. And my man from Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com, the crowd goes wild for Kyle Hamrick. Wow. There he is.
Wow.
Hey, man.
Sean, it is a pleasure to be here on your blessed airwaves on National Radio Day. Thank you for having me.
Well, as long as you, let me go sit on National, you know, Journalist Day or Newspaper Day, I can sit with you while you type a story up.
Yeah, sure. That'd be great.
Okay. We hadn't had a chance to talk beforehand, but I want to talk to you about drones. I want to talk to you about Amtrak. But before we do, I want to talk to you about this story. And I found out about this story from y'all when I was still on vacation, and I saw this headline, "The Bomb Threat Disrupts Baker." Okay, so I'll let you, if you just want to lay out the story, because then I got something to say. So if you'll go ahead and lay that out.
Yeah. Well, what went on there? There was a bomb threat called in to Baker, I believe it was on Tuesday, Baker High School. And they had to clear the school, get everybody out so the police could do a search. And they found nothing. The Mobile Police Department, you know, found no evidence of a credible threat, but it was enough to clear the classrooms and halls and, you know, get everybody up in a panic.
Yes. And that it'll do, right? It'll panic. It panic kids. It panics, obviously, parents. Got a couple kids. I get that part. But and not to diminish, but I did some, upon seeing that, and was riding back with a co-worker of yours, and saw that and said, let's find this out. Not before everybody gets themselves breathlessly typing on the text line. I'm not diminishing it, but I looked at the numbers of times that this has been true and not been true, and then I went and said, which days of the week do most bomb threats get called in schools? See, this is why I can't have a normal job. This is why I can't work for a corporate radio station, because they would never let somebody say something like I'm saying. But the majority of them are Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays. And when they talk to the people and they catch why they did it, it's because, no big surprise, y'all, they had a test that day. Or they just wanted to disrupt the school schedule and get out early for the weekend.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah, now there was one that I covered when I was on the Eastern Shore. There was one that was called in, I think, to Daphne High School a few years back. Caused a huge, huge panic, and the Baldwin County School System said that one came from like way out of state. That it came, I think, from California or someplace. So there are some,
because you can't spoof a number. You couldn't spoof a number or anything.
But, could could be, but I am just saying that there are some sick folks out there.
100%. That's why, and you're not involved in this. This is my opinion. This is not Kyle Hamrick's opinion. Get mad at me. Don't get mad at Kyle. I like I said, I'm a dad of kids who went to school, who are places where we had security. And there's a lot of threats that happen to schools that really do scare me. This one, though, it's just not that. I mean, obviously, it'd be the, but it's just when I heard the story, I said, "Who had a test?" I'm sorry, but it's like, and then I went and looked. Not that there's not real credible cases of this, but there. It's just interesting. Like if you look, if I was a school administrator, I'd say it's Friday, exams Friday. I bet you we're gonna get something called in today. You know, I don't. Yeah. It's a serious crime if they do it, but I'm just.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, that has been done before. I mean, there was another case that we covered where somebody called in a bomb threat to the courthouse in Bay Minette, and I think it was because they didn't want to go to court that day.
That's correct, yes.
Day. Yeah.
Yep.
So it's not not unheard of, you know.
Okay, so there we go. That's all I'm saying. Send all the hate mail to me, not to Kyle. He had nothing to do with it. He was going to talk about positive stories, too. Amtrak, first year.
Woo-hoo.
How about that? I mean, the numbers are in. How many?
150,000 people in the first year, which is more than two times what they had thought would ride the train in the first year. So big success for the train to New Orleans, Mobile, and spots on the Mississippi Gulf Coast there.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, I said, I hope it continues. It's Mobile, so we like something when it's new. Hopefully it continues. So I have gone over and back. My son and I went over and back, and I financed two over and backs for my daughter. So I have been a portion of that. So, you know, one, you know, two over and backs, you know, and then two more. So four round trips I paid for.
Right. Yeah. And folks are loving it. I've heard great reviews. I still have to make some time to get me and my wife over there, you know, to ride the train and see what all the fanfare is all about. But I've heard nothing but positives here, and they've had to pack on some new cars, you know, for Mardi Gras and for Saints games. And it's a success that I was told, you know, they just, you know, they're blown away by it, and they look forward to keeping the steam going on the old choo-choo to New Orleans.
You know, the part of it here is that it's going both directions, not just the train, but the people, because that was a worry of mine. I thought it would be popular for people, you know, from here to go to New Orleans for the day or you know, go for a long weekend or something like that, and kind of the, not even the business part of it. I know that's going to be a big part of it, but the, hey, wouldn't it be fun, kids, if we got on the train and went to New Orleans, and then we did the museums and stuff and came back. That's what I've done.
Yeah.
But to hear the other side, and it was anecdotal. I had heard it from a restaurateur in downtown saying, hey, I got a lot of people, Sean, coming in that are from Mississippi Gulf Coast or New Orleans that are in Mobile. They're in my restaurant, you know, I'm talking to them.
Yeah.
You had David Clark. You asked him here. He was talking about that's showing up in the hotel side too.
That's tour guides. That's right. Yeah. Folks are booking tour guides of Mobile, and they're staying in the hotels. They're eating at the restaurants, and I mean, there was one or two stories that we did where there was a group of folks from a senior center, I think in D'Iberville or Pascagoula, who made it like a monthly or a bi-monthly trip to ride the train to Mobile, go eat at Morrison's, and then go back home. So,
which is the only Morrison's left in the country, right? The one here?
That's right. That's right. And I did a story on that too. So
maybe we'd name the bridge the Morrison's, the I-10 Mobile River Morrison's Bay Bridge, something like that. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's a good option to put on the list. But you know, like most things here, and so you know, get briefly on the bridge name and thing. There are all kinds of names for the roads and bridges that we have here that we don't go by what the actual name is. So folks can slap a name on the thing, whichever name that they want to, but the Mobile Minds will come up with a better one. and like, you know, with the Dolly Parton Bridge. That's mm-hmm. the General W.K. Wilkinson Bridge.
Yep.
And I've done a story on that, too. I think the Bayway is properly known as the Jubilee Parkway.
It is, yes.
So, you know, folks, you can put whatever name you want to, but if it doesn't stick, then the locals will come up with a new one.
Yeah, we'll call it what we want to. I don't have the numbers in front of me. Maybe you didn't have them either. I know it didn't in the story. But I know the city had signed on for, you know, the $3 million with a sunset for, you know, to prop up for Amtrak. Are these numbers we're getting now, is this enough that Amtrak can live off this? Do we know? I mean, if we're doing that $150,000 in the first year, is that enough that Amtrak now, like, you know, we take the training wheels off and you can go ride?
I think, which you know, we've still got the novelty of this thing in mm-hmm. the first year. And I believe that the agreement with the city, I think, was like a 3-year
it's
thing.
It's three, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe we'll give it a little bit more time before we think we can get the wheels off. Because I know that folks still would like to see, like, a permanent covered station there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like what they have now. That's got like a little pop-up tent and some
parking lot and tent. Yep.
Yeah.
Just some scaffolding.
Some scaffolding. I think that there's more that the city, you know, would need to see before they, you know, unscrew the training wheels off of this thing. But if the success keeps going, and if we see that, you know, the ridership numbers are high, then perhaps, you know, the city wouldn't need to, you know, put up more funding, or might put up less funding. I mean, that's something that we'll have to see.
That's what I would love. That was what I thought the hope was. And when, you know, the city council passed this and said, okay, we're going to fund it, but it has a sunset, it's not a forever thing, I said, okay, good.
Right.
Here, the risk is the $3 million. Yeah, this is what is at risk, but it's not a continuing. That idea of like, hey, let's get them started and going, and then hopefully this is a thing that, yeah, it's self-perpetuating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that with more folks getting on this thing, because I know that I still have to buy, you know, 2 or 3 tickets to get on there, so that's some money that'll be going into the pot.
Yeah, you're
going to
put them in the black. Pretty much you buying 2 or 3 tickets is what's going to – you are the success of it. We're depending on you.
Push them over the top, and it'll be a big success there. But I think, you know, that there's still more to see kind of, you know, on what the funding need would be. But if it is something that continues to outperform the expectations and, you know, proves it can kind of do its own thing and run on its own steam, then, you know, I mean, that's a bridge that the council will cross when they get there. But yeah, I think that, you know, the folks in the council will kind of need to see a little bit more before we, you know, start getting the screwdrivers out.
Well, here's my segue. Think about this. So if it gets up and running on its own, how many? I mean, if they have that $3 million, they're not going to be putting towards Amtrak. You know how many drones they could buy to fly over the city of Mobile? Think about that.
I mean, a fleet. A flock of drones. Yeah.
Squadron.
Yeah. So that's been a thing that, you know, we've done lately at the council, is they've, you know, put some money toward beefing up the drone supply for the city's public safety. And they had said at this week's meeting, you know, they had this big contract up to buy, I think maybe 4 drones or 5 drones, and which I saw that, and I was like, all right, so we're just going to get some more drones here. But then the folks on the council said twice, you know, they emphasized that this is not for spying, this is not mm-hmm. for violating folks' privacy, because they were
sunbathing in their backyards,
complaints.
You know, yeah.
right, because they had heard some complaints from folks in the public who saw this and got worried, and so they took the time to say, you know, this is just to keep folks safe, and there's not going to be any kind of improper use of these things, spying and stuff like that. So That's
well, good thing. I mean, good thing they didn't say they would be spying. Well, that would have made a bigger headline. Council members say, yeah, actually, we are going to spy on you. Yep, that's exactly what we're doing.
This is mass surveillance. Right. Yeah, that's not the case there, you know, and the city is buying up these drones so they can keep an eye on things like for big gatherings like Mardi Gras and stuff at parks. And it's just, you know, it's part of the new way to police without having to keep as many officers on the ground. You know, they'll still have those, but they can kind of use their resources. You know, they can work smarter is kind of the public safety goal for this thing, I've been told.
Well, I heard the music come up. It means we're going to have to wrap it up, but I want to tell everybody the cover story this week on our the guy who follows me here in 40 minutes, Paul Feinbaum.
Absolutely. Rob had a sit down with him. It's a very fun read. Some sports, some Senate campaign tales, all kinds of good stuff. And you can read it in our printed paper or my favorite way, online at lanyapmobile.com.
Hey, thank you so much, Kyle. We'll do it again next week. And we really need you here before the end of the fiscal year to go ride the train, please.
Absolutely. I'll see what I can do.
All right, there he goes, Kyle Hamrick from Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. And we're coming right back. More Midday Mobile. We are live from the Business Expo with the Mobile Chamber here at the Convention Center.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, so welcome back. It is Midday Mobile, and we are here at the Mobile Convention Center for the Chamber's Business Expo. Speaking of businesses in our city and also institutions of higher learning, let's check in with Professor Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Hey, Ron.
How you doing, sir?
I'm good, man. And precious metals, the story yesterday was some improvement in price, which has been pretty strong over the last year or so. But what are we looking at today?
Everything is up today except for palladium, amazingly. Gold's up just $7 at $45.18.79. Silver's up $1.26 at $67.98. And platinum and palladium, like I said, palladium dropped like $9. Let me see, palladium's down $9, and platinum was up $1. So they were pretty steady.
Okay, explain that. Explain, because people hear that and go, what the heck? So why is it? Why are those two going opposite directions?
Well, palladium, there's the other manufacturer that was left that was still using palladium for their catalytic converters is switching to platinum. So it it's just the fact that now all the new catalytic converters that are going to be manufactured are going to be made out of platinum.
There we go. And this is what I'm talking about when I talk about the professor. Not only does he say, hey, here's what, you know, is happening with precious metals, you tell us why, which to me is like the most important, not just saying, hey, my cousin said he bought some gold. Well, I need to know why. That's a lot of times people go, I hear that's the thing. I want to know why that's the thing. That's what I appreciate.
Absolutely. It's always good to have the correct information.
100%. All right. If people are going to come find you online and in person, how do they do it?
If they want to see us in person, they come to 2204 Gummidge Street in Midtown Mobile. Online, we're at mobilebaycoins.com, or you can just give us a call at the shop at 251-725-1590.
Hey, thanks, Ron.
You're welcome, Sean.
All right, there he goes, Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. And get to some text here, although they're slow loading here, but hopefully we'll get them rolling here shortly. Oh, I do, before I forget, because we're going to talk about some radio after we come back from the news. But this is for the younger people, you'll have no idea what we're talking about, all right? And for the much older people, you won't understand what we're talking about. But if you are in your, I'd say, 40s, yeah, maybe 40s, you're in on it. Let's say mid-40s. From mid-40s to mid-60s, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about here. Columbia House, you're thinking right now, do I still owe them money for that Dire Straits CD they sent me that didn't send back? Well, maybe you can get out of it, because Columbia House, a pioneer of subscription music before streaming. Hey, kids, the way they did it is they lure you in, because you paid like, I don't know, it's like $2 and you'll get 15 CDs, which was like the mother load when we were young. You get all those, but then you had to take a CD each month, and if you didn't like it, you had to send it back, and you never got around to send it back, and bam, that's how they made that money. Well, they're shutting down after, it says, 7 decades in the business of shipping. I guess they shipped albums and then cassettes. It was I don't think I ever got cassette. I think it was just CDs. When I got on the Columbia House train, I was in college, in 1990. But it says, widely reported, the story from CNN, widely reported statement appeared on the website saying the company is closing September 15th. That means, I guess, if you still owe them for the Barry Manilow's greatest hit CD you never sent back, I guess, unless they sold the debt to somebody, I don't know, you're off the hook. But 70 years, no more Columbia House. I can't believe they didn't do it 30 years ago. All right, coming right back. News is next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. We are live at the floor. I know there's multiple floors. We're on one, the biggest of the floors at the Mobile Convention Center for the Mobile Chambers Business Expo. I enjoyed visiting with folks coming by here. You can do that. You can even see and get your picture made with one Dan Brennan. He is sitting right on my port side, so you can come see him. And we were going to ask him about if he was a Columbia House member in just a little bit. Also, yeah, you put those set on, but we're going to ask my buddy David McCrary from LCM Motorcars. You remember that thing, Columbia House? Did you ever get those out where you get, like, sent off $2 and got 15 tapes or something like that?
Yeah.
And then they sent you one you didn't want and you had to return it?
Well, good luck on that.
Yeah, well, so if you owe them money, they're out of business. They're shutting down. So we have that story coming up in just a little bit. Okay, let's talk cars. Let's talk trucks. Let's talk financing. What you got?
Well, so Dan's sitting to your left. Are you taking on water? we got a great inventory. We're busy. We've got customers. I mean, this heat, you know, we've been a little slow here in the last couple of weeks because it's just so hot outside. But it's like all of a sudden everybody's stir crazy and they got to get out of the house. So get out of the house and come buy a car. We've probably got 70 on the ground, and we've always got stuff coming, as you know, and got a great selection of trucks, small SUVs, cars. I mean, anything we need. And if we don't have it, like we always say, we'll go get it for you.
All right. And if people want to check out those vehicles in person and online, how do they do it?
In person, we're at Highway 90 and Plantation. It's the exit 15A off I-10, and we're the third red light on the left-hand corner. You can give us a call, 251-375-0068, or just go to the website, lcmmotorcars.com. Check us out.
Thank you, David. And I'll let you know as soon as Columbia House completely shuts down, and we can... That Zamfir album you bought, you won't have to, you know, you won't have to pay
for
it.
It's going to be like a library book I didn't return. Let me know.
Good stuff. Thank you, brother. All right. There he goes, the man at LCM Motorcars. You know, speaking of Business Expo, that's what we do around here every day, talk to businesses. And I want to come back and talk about that on National Radio Day with my friend and mentor, Mr. Dan Brennan. But before that, I'd like to get Mr. Dan Brennan to talk about Columbia House.
So, okay, you're like striking a nerve. You know, we're suddenly like,
look at the text. Oh, I've struck a nerve. Yeah.
Yeah. Like way in the recesses of my memory.
Mm-hmm.
So Columbia House, what kind of racket were they running? So you could get like Jackson 5 and Jerry Vale and all that, anything and everything
well,
sent
to
you?
Well, they tempted you in. So Jim and Georgetown said it best. You get 13 albums.
Yeah.
For me, it was more, I think, by that time I was getting CDs. But 13.
What did you get?
For a penny. No, he's right. This is how they did it, for a penny. He said, funny thing, every time I moved, I did it again. Never bought a single one at club prices. So that would happen, too. In college, we were always moving, so they would resend you these things. So the hustle was, you get this temp, like Jim's talking about, you can get 13 CDs for a penny. I felt like I was a little kid at book club. Remember book club, you get to order all the books?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
So, and you sit patiently checking the... in the crappy mailbox there at the apartment I lived in, Tuscaloosa or whatever, for the CDs. You get those and you're all fired up. You got 13. But then you've, but then you've signed a deal with Columbia House.
I see.
And you would
Signed over your future. Like
that's correct.
Like a musician making a bad deal at the start of their deal.
Very much so. Like, you'll hear so-and-so went broke. You say, how'd they go broke? We should have seen the deal that you signed with Columbia House.
You signed it. You sold out Madison Square Garden. Why are you broke?
Yeah, because they signed it with Columbia House. So then they would send you an album or two every month. And if you didn't want it, all you had to do is send it back, Dan. But they realized most human beings are not going to remember send it. And it had to be done by a certain time, I think, or whatever.
They had you. But
the dealer man had gotten into you.
And they knew that by the lazy nature of humans, we were going to run up our own tab because we were too lazy.
The greed of us going to get 13 for a penny.
Yeah, first greed and then laziness.
Yes.
They preyed on those two elements of who we are down to our core.
Cameron says, I used to bounce back and forth between Columbia House and BMG. Yeah, they were all doing, and I, you know, then getting into the rock and roll radio world, I saw a lot of that stuff afterwards, too, trying to get a certain number of albums sold. You know, they do this with books as well,
yeah.
So they can show traffic on it. So if they can send this many albums to all these college kids, and even the kids don't want Zamfir's, you know, extended
pan flute
extended remix, they forget to send it back, and so the record company can say, we've moved this many pieces of,
yes,
you know, Zamfir.
Yes. Legitimately, they can say that because you didn't send it back in time.
That's right. So they had to add an incentive. They're getting, I don't have the whole story in front of me, but I mean, there was a little bit of the payola world still existing when I first got in the music business. So they were kind of, I'm sure, paying Columbia House to move a certain number to, yeah, make it seem like it was trending up the charts.
But this is the first time I figured out what this scam was all about. This thing is 30 years ago. So yeah. I had no idea what was going on. I've got no business sense anyway. So I'm just like, hey, seems like a good deal.
Well, you know, Michael said we cut them out with Napster. And that sure happened when music sharing started happening. And then people getting it online. But I want to point out that obviously they had enough money in the bank account. It's not, they're going to be closing September 15th. They have been open 70 years.
70?
70 years, 7 decades of Columbia House.
1956.
Look at this young lady here in this ad. Any 7 records or tapes for only 1 cent. And she's getting Neil Diamond.
Yeah.
Barry Manilow, Crystal Gayle. Gosh, these are some horrible albums she's getting.
Yeah. She's almost,
ELO, I don't know which ELO album. It could be cool.
The ELO is out of place.
That could have been cool.
That's,
yes,
out of place.
But, you know, they tempted you, and I wonder how many people in their 20s, whether it was, you know, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, 20, that you got tempted by the Columbia House.
Well, it was a very tempting presentation, good marketing. I was never tempted. See, here's what they didn't count on me. Lazy on the front end. So I, it seemed like a good deal, but I was lazy.
You didn't even follow through on getting 13 CDs for a penny.
The first step was too much for me, but I think I was also a bit skeptical.
It protected you from yourself.
I did. My laziness has done a lot for me in my life.
Fantastic.
By the way, the Zamfir. We have a frank discussion about Zamfir.
Yeah.
Master of the pan flute.
The pan flute.
Who was second? Nobody.
That's right.
Who was the Robin to this Batman wizard on the pan flute? Who else played it? Have you ever?
If you're going to enter to a space, you might as well be the dominant person in that space.
He's the only one in that space. Have you ever seen a pan flute other than in the hands and on the lips of one Zamfir?
You've seen in the characterization of mythological characters like Pan, right? Half man, half goat with that flute. But other than that, I've not seen anybody that had all human appendages.
Thank you. So no other human being has ever possessed a pan flute. If somebody was going to be the all-time master, it'd be the one guy that had it.
That's true. It's like, you know.
Have you gone to a music store and said, I would like to see your selection of pan flutes? There is no such
thing. Or go in and start asking for some deeper cuts from Zamfir. But, you know, there's a record shop somewhere. There's somebody who drinks a very fancy coffee every day that goes, I do. I liked his first album. The sophomore effort was okay. He retooled with the band and came back for the junior effort. It was okay. His live stuff is really good. There's somebody out there that says that.
Well, and you know, this is why Stevie Wonder is Stevie Wonder. The harmonica, you can pick it up anywhere. Everybody could give it a shot. I don't think anybody played it any more melodically or soulfully than Stevie Wonder. He is a master of the harmonica, which is readily available to you and I at any time, anywhere. The pan flute is locked up somewhere. We don't have our...
You're saying if you're going to get good on an instrument, be an instrument nobody else has, so nobody can challenge you.
They praised him in the commercial.
That's right.
He was the master of the pan flute, and I say, bunk. Who else had a chance?
I mean, it's a solid discussion point. Do y'all... Maybe there's somebody in the audience, because the FM Talk 106.5 audience does know everything. Somebody in the audience
knows
everything.
Well, I've realized that in 6 years, yeah.
Then make sure you let me know... who is better on the pan flute?
Like, where'd the pan flute? What nation developed a pan flute?
No, it's gonna be. It's got to be somewhere with
Germany.
No, it's
got England.
Pan flute, I mean, it's giving Greece to me because of the mythology.
Okay,
just pan
all
with
right.
the flute.
Okay.
By the way, Sean, other Sean on the text line says I got me Dire Straits, David Bowie, which I love both of those,
mm-hmm.
and Yanni Live at the Acropolis on my first batch of Columbia House.
Yanni Collecting. Live.
You say eclectic. I have another word for it, Sean, for the last one, but eclectic is fine. You can.
Yeah, we've got a word that we can't say.
That's right. So, but Yanni, at the Acropolis. So that's the Greek.
Which gives the Greek connection Titan, again.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. All right. Also today, National Radio Day.
I didn't know that.
August 20th, National Radio Day.
We missed it. Me and Dalton completely whiffed on that.
I mean, this is why. And Dalton's over there just goofing around, not doing radio on National
networking.
Radio Day.
He's networking.
So, yeah, it's celebrated today. Why? Ask me why August 20th.
Why August 20th?
It's funny you should ask, Dan.
Yes.
National Radio Day because, and you'll appreciate this, marks the anniversary of station 8MK, which is now WWJ in Detroit.
Wow.
That's broadcasting. Because we all think KDKA, right?
Yes.
Well, a lot of people do. Make a Marconi joke or something. But it became the first station regularly daily programming on August 20th of 1920.
All right, I've got some interesting trivia that I'm tied to with that radio station. 1920. What?
No, it's not from 1920.
No.
So this, WWJ, Detroit.
You may find this interesting or you may not.
Okay.
My first job in radio was in a town called Washington, Georgia, which was in between Athens University and Augusta. And it was a small town right tucked in the middle there. And I was trying to get a job at a radio station that was so small that they couldn't fire me. That we'll put up with
kinda,
this guy. We'll put up with his weak rookie year.
Like a Zamfir thing. You went somewhere where you were the only
I was going to be the master. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was WLOV, Washington, Georgia. From that town of Washington, Georgia, was the longtime play-by-play man of the Detroit Tigers on that radio station that you mentioned. He was a legend in Detroit and really around the nation. He went from Washington, Georgia to Detroit, which was telling me at the time, you can make it anywhere, Dan, because look at him.
That's right.
Look at him.
I was at the College Station, University of Alabama, when a guy walked in that I was supposed to know, and afterwards I figured out when he signed his autograph for me, I still have it, maybe in my office, at the office there, Mel Allen.
Oh, wow.
Walked in and said, hey, Sean, you're doing a radio show here. I'm like, yeah, Mr. Allen.
Pretty interesting that back in the 40s and 50s, so many New York announcers for baseball were from the South. Mel Allen was from the South. Red Barber, I think, did the Dodgers. But he was like, Red Barber, hey, strike one. It's like, why did New York take so much? Lindsey Nelson,
because the voice stands out and people liked it. Because the same way, somebody with an English or an Irish accent, at the bar, every girl has to go see him.
Yes.
Female, not girl.
Yeah.
Female has to go see him. Maybe that way you put Southerners in the North.
But they were the masters of that time. It was all University of Alabama graduates, and they all migrated, got the jobs up there. And they
pretty
were
good broadcasters.
They were good at it, yeah.
Pretty good broadcasters.
They were good at it.
All right, well, we'll do this here. We'll come back, and we'll talk more about National Radio Day. And I just have a little thing to say here about locally owned radio stations and all seven of us left in the United States when we returned right
that?
Here on Midday Mobile.
Yeah, one here.
Well, there's a few more, but there ain't many.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, so welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile here at the Mobile Convention Center for the Mobile Chambers Business Expo. Hey, see anybody? So Columbia House does not have a booth here. I understand it, Dan.
They're winding things down, man.
So I'm just making sure that Columbia House did not. If y'all didn't hear the story earlier, go Google it. You're off the hook. All those albums you didn't return.
Yeah, like those library books, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. They're shutting down. got a side discussion here of some.
Well, you had the pan flute guy, aggravated me to no end that he was the master of the pan flute when he never gave anybody else a chance.
He's the only one playing the game.
Hand the pan flute to another another musician of any note, they would master it in 24 hours.
Can I say this here? Because so Ben says, according to the Google machine, the most famous rock flautist is Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull, who's awesome. Remember, they beat Metallica for the best hard rock metal performance at the 1989 Grammys. But that is, Ian plays, he does not play a pan flute,
no.
I don't think. I think
no.
There's a distinction. He doesn't say Zamfir's master of the flute, master of the pan flute.
The pan flute is a middle finger to the flute. I can tell you that right now.
The
pan flute is that.
The pan flute's got all the like the little different tubes. It's not you're not running off like
I'm
I think
just
you change
saying,
tube for changing note.
You give it to Stevie Wonder, he's got it down in 12 minutes, okay? That's what I'm saying.
You're saying the pan flute is the kazoo of the flute world?
Closer to a kazoo than to the flute.
Okay.
And now, by the way, you had other artists at that time that you could only buy through mail order. Slim Whitman.
Slim Whitman.
A very distinguished gentleman, by the way. Boxcar Willie. Some lesser knowns. Hobo McDermott. He was pretty good. One last one here. Down and Out Dalrymple. You might remember.
Down and Out. What?
Down and Out Dalrymple. He was,
I do not
again,
remember.
You have these artists, and they were all, for whatever reason, socioeconomically challenged, we would say.
Sure.
Or Down and Out, or homeless.
Down and Out, or Hobo.
Or Hobo.
Yeah. Hobo. Yarn.
And then you just had Slim, who just by the nature of his slender body, you have to think was undernourished.
Well, you
so there was this
though,
theme.
Like, and you never know, though, when they say somebody, they call them Slim. Are they really saying they're slim, or is it like a Little John thing from Robin Hood? Yeah, Little John was a giant.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
Which I do love that there was sarcasm back in the old days.
There was like, sarcasm.
Hey, Little John.
Yeah.
At 6'7".
Yeah. So, no, Slim Whitten was, he was legitimately on the slim side.
Okay, but what was Hobo really a hobo?
I would suspect not.
No, probably if they could get him to the recording studio. Hobo, you know, what is it, McDermott?
Hobo McDermott and Down and Out Dalrymple. They were lesser known than Boxcar Willie. But Boxcar Willie, think about his life.
That was on, they always advertised that on TV.
Yes.
When I was a kid, Boxcar Willie.
Boxcar Willie and Slim Whitman. And so this Columbia house, this that was one of the several scams of its day.
Well, I was thinking, you know, I should have known that I could have, because everybody's looking for different names and different addresses to put in to get back into the Columbia House game. I could have been Hobo McDermott. Living on Easy Street. Something like that. Hey, and we'll get some more of these checks. I do want to say, with this being National Radio Day, here's a soliloquy portion. Not really, because we're both here. Locally owned radio. Why is it important? I had to think about this on the ride down here. And Celeste was driving, so I could think for a second. You know what it is?
When Celeste is driving me, I can't think.
Well, neither of y'all can think, but I gave it my best. The fact that everybody can walk up here and talk about the shows they like, you call up, you stop by, you visit with us. So I like this show, I listen to this other show, like so many people have done here today. You don't get that with corporate.
Right?
I mean, it's not just me beating up on corporate to beat up on corporate, even though there's plenty of reasons to do it. But your access to what is the media of your community
right
only exists with local. There might be local people working for companies here, but they don't always get to make the decision.
No.
It comes from a home office or something like that.
Exactly.
Now, it's super important because we're here through hurricanes and floods and any kind of issues like that. We support local business. We are a local business. We're dealing with local businesses here. We get it. This is where we live. We've got community identity. But it's the fact that you have at your input actually makes some difference with local papers, radio stations. There's really not any locally owned TV stations anymore. But that's what I think, you know, on National Radio Day, instead of just doing a bunch of Marconi jokes that I could do, it's important because what started as local radio, it still exists. Now, we are maybe, I don't know, on the endangered list or at least the threatened list as an entity in this country. But we're super valuable because it's your conduit to be able to talk about what is heard in your community.
Well, just listen to the comments we received on a day like this when we're out. And I tell Dalton this a lot. He doesn't realize it because he's busy with his two girls and his young family and all that. And I say, Dalton, if you were to get out and actually get a chance to meet the listeners, you would find out that they are very grateful for this radio station and for a chance to wake up and immediately understand what's going on locally because of a show that's provided by you you allow us to do it. You've done it yourself, and then it moves on with politics with Jeff Poore and a very eclectic show with yours in the middle of the day. But the audience seems to love it.
Yeah, well, you get absolutely, and you get interaction with the folks that host shows on here. And you have firsthand interaction. But also the reason local politicos are on the show, why local authors are on the show, why local newsmakers are on the show, is because we live in the same community.
Right.
You don't get that as from a corporate entity because they don't live there. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, I didn't want to do this for just, I'm going to tell you why we're good, not why they're bad. And why we're good is you have an opportunity. I just thought about it sitting here today. I was thinking about this on the way down. I got down here. I said, on this National Radio Day, which kind of caught me leaning too. I went, oh, crap, it's National Radio Day. What makes it important, I think, is local radio, which is a on-air representation of one part of our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I represent everybody in every culture, you know.
Yeah.
But we all together do that where you get a homogenized version coming from corporate groups. You know, you don't get, there's, well, they don't have time nor business model to care about what the flavor of the place is.
No.
So,
and especially a place like Mobile that you cannot put your finger on, really.
Nope.
Right?
I would say I agree with that 100%. Now, this guy, talking about local flavor, I know he talks to people all over the country, but the flavor of the South, it's Paul Feinbaum. And he's on the way next. See y'all tomorrow.